right here, so what are we talking about? He cold topped it.
Okay. Ready to go. Yeah.
Eight iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bogey Boys podcast. You're joined here by your hosts, Kevin and Mark. This is season four, episode one. New setting, new podcast, new segments, new us. Where have we been, Mark?
You smell that?
What is it?
It's the return of the lads.
Return of the lads.
The most highly anticipated return since Tiger Woods last week.
And how did that go down the pan?
I know.
Which we'll come into in a minute.
Coming into it, are we?
We are.
Coming in. How are we, Kev?
Well, I feel like it's New Year's Day for me, to be honest. I've just been out and about.
You have.
And that's what's delayed the start of the pod, because it's nearly March.
It's been good to have a break, though, but I have missed it.
No, I have. I feel like sometimes if I'm not on it, I'm not concentrating on golf, I'm not relaxing, not watching it, I forget that it's even on.
Where have we been then, Kev? Come on.
Well, I went to Thailand, which we'll just breeze over.
Yeah.
Then we went to the PGA show.
We did, January.
Wow.
Didn't know what to expect. I think, obviously, anyone who's been listening to the show for a while now knows that we've got the Appear On brand first full year as a brand last year. And last year, we took it to the Bunker, the golf show, didn't we?
We did.
Minimal collection of clothing.
So really, wasn't it?
I know. Didn't really know what to... We didn't know what to expect, did we, with it all? And then, obviously, this year, took it up another level, went straight over to the PGA show and just thought, you know what, let's give it a go. Let's see what the American market's like to start with. Yeah. Play a bit of golf, network with some people, met a few people over there that we know. Had an unbelievable experience over at Adina Golf Club, didn't we?
No, that was the highlight of it, like, wasn't it? Like, just getting put up in the penthouse for free, playing Adina, going to meet my cousins, playing Admiral's Cove, going to meet the lads from college, playing Frenchman's Creek, going to Tiger's Restaurant. That was
met your brother's father-in-law.
Yeah, met Big G.
Big G, George. Yeah.
But then I think the whole overall experience as the overall show experience, maybe a little bit underprepared for what it was when we walked in. All the other apparel brands had big stands, lights, colours. We just had a Walmart rack, a couple of signs. But I think that added to the flavour of the conversation we were meeting people, didn't it?
Yeah, and do you know what? At the end of the day, we've been trading as a brand for 1 year. Again, didn't know what to expect. These brands that are obviously well-established and set up, you're talking about the Callaways of the world, the TaylorMade of the world, you know, they've been trading for, like, decades. And even the newer brands that are out there, they've still been going for 5, 6, 7 years and established themselves in America. But it was good to see the actual American market, what the Americans are looking for in a golf brand, because obviously our plans are global domination, global takeover. So, you know, there's no bigger market than the American market. And we've set up some real good networking opportunities and some plans to hopefully launch Appear On in America into 2025, haven't we?
We have. And I think that, like, going through an email process with a foreign country where you've never met and explaining the whole brand, explaining what we've got, the products, the quality, sending it over to them, 30 emails back and forth, them sending us a sample back and forth, what material, swatch books. That all got done within 30 minutes, an hour with each person. So we went to like a manufacturer in India, done it all, see what they had to offer,
yeah.
See what waterproof range they had, see what pants they had, went to Vietnam, went to Taiwan, went to China, went to Korea, all around the globe.
Yeah, Thailand.
Thailand, getting all them contacts face-to-face, talking to people, them feeling the clothes, us feeling their samples, talking through exactly what we want, write down our orders, getting samples in, and it just... Even that, just speeding that whole process up for 2025 is worth its weight in gold.
Yeah. I mean, if anyone's never been to the PGA Golf Show, even just to visit it, highly recommend it. Yeah, I mean, you get to see a bit of everything. There's, like you say, there's manufacturers there. There's a Visit Scotland, Visit Ireland stand over there. You're getting to see how them golf clubs are structured and how they work. And again, good opportunity for us to network with them about potentially doing collaboration work with these businesses. There was a Visit Italy over there, so you get to see the culture of Italy and what the golf courses are. Lake Como looked unbelievable for a golf holiday. something that's definitely now on the bucket list after speaking to the guys over on That Stand. But again, it's just about engaging, telling people our story, what we're trying to do, what we're trying to achieve with the brand. You know, we've got the Appearing Academy well established and set up now, community group set up where we're going to be introducing more young people into the game through the work that we're doing over at Bootle locally to us. You know, there's no end to what we're doing with the actual brand itself, but from a clothing perspective, which is obviously the where it all started with Appearon, it's great to
just bang them on a second. I've just been itching me and thinking, where's my headphones?
But yeah, no, so yeah, the PGA show as a, you know, as a summary, it was an unbelievable experience to meet people that we would never have met before in any other setting. You know, we've communicating with them now, staying in touch, opportunities to go every year. The golf courses that we played, you know, we played Southern Dunes, what a track that was. I beat Kev, what a day. Then we went on to Adina Golf and Country Club, which is over in Ocala, which is in Florida. Unbelievable. Big thanks to Mike for sorting that out. It was
like a sliding doors moment, wasn't it? Like on the plane, we met Phil, who's like the social media, who does social media, who was going out there to do it for Adina. And if we didn't meet Phil on the plane, we wouldn't have met Mick and Steve. And then if we didn't meet Mick and Steve, we wouldn't have met Mike Timpson. We wouldn't have played Adina, and we probably would have been in Disneyland that day instead of getting put up in the penthouse. So I don't know which one would have been better, because absolutely chopped it round Adina. But it was the place to be, wasn't it? If you've got a brand, yeah, anything to do with golf, you want to be there, don't you?
If you want to take a brand serious and you want to, like we say, we do want to sell globally, and we've got some real good opportunities now off the back of that PGA show. So if you are a startup brand who does want to take things seriously in the market, then we would suggest that investing in a trip over there and just giving it a go, because you say it's not a place where you go to sell your clothing, it's a place where you go to sell your story. So
yeah,
and I think that's the key part of it. We've got an unbelievable story that sits behind the brand. We truly believe in what we want to achieve with you know, the growth of the game, selling clothing at a fair price, giving back to the players through the Appearon athlete program, and globally selling the clothing and competing with the top brands in the world is what we want to do. So that's where...
Well, that's it. It's like you've got to have one eye on the competition and being out there, feeling all the different materials, seeing like the level of construction that they've got, seeing the range that they've got, and just comparing it to us a year two, where they're in year 10, year 15, some year 20 plus. It just gives you a good marker of, like, you can go to as many shops as you want, but when the brand's there with all of its apparel, and you're like, okay, this is where you need to be. Like, and that's where we've got to strive to get to if we want to get a foothold in the market, especially in America, because Americans, if it's not the same or better than the last thing, it's not even considered, is it?
Yeah, exactly. I think one thing that I took away from the golf show as a whole was the uniqueness of our brand and our designs.
Yeah.
Like, you know, when you look at a lot of the different brands over there was nothing that I thought, oh, that's quite unique.
No.
But there was nothing that was also similar to ours. Now, that can be a positive and a negative, because some people might think it's too one way and they mightn't like it. They like what's already out there in the market. But also it's good for people who like to try out new brands, and it did stand out. And that was a lot of the feedback that we got, was as well as the story that sits behind the brand and what we're doing, like I've just mentioned previously. It's also like, wow, I've never seen nothing like this before. This is quite unique. And, you know, we're pushing that this year. We've got the new launch of the clothing coming next month in March. So, just keep a lookout for the brand and keep supporting us. Thanks for supporting us. And we're looking to have another good year this year, aren't we?
Well, we are. And we're just looking on... We're not going to be an overnight success and go away either. So we want to keep building incrementally. Like, we were in three pro shops. We've got deals with 18 if a couple more deals come in. That's a nice steady growth in my eyes.
No, definitely. And that's what you've got to do. You just got to keep plucking away, haven't you? You know, the feedback's been positive so far. I'm sure the feedback will be positive again this year. Affordable luxury under the Appearon seems to be working.
Yeah, I just want to say on the back of the pro shop thing as well, just a big thank you to all the pros that have placed orders and all the customers that have bought from us. We were obviously seeing Shopify pings from Liverpool only, and now we're starting to see them branch out a bit further. So it just, again, that shows growth in more of a spread around the country.
Yeah.
We're seeing overseas inquiries. We're seeing pro shops, customers from America DMing saying, can you get it within 5 days? And we're like, yeah. So it just, it's obviously a testament to the product, and it's a testament to the way we've set the brand up in supporting athletes and helping a couple of lads on like the lower tours. They're wearing the clothes, they get to see on the social media, track their progress, which we're gonna double down this year on the Appear on Athlete page, aren't we?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, we've got obviously a couple of things going on the Appear on Athlete. So while we're on the point of the Appear on Athlete, we might as well come to obviously the athletes for this year. So we've got 12 pros and 11 pros, 7 amateurs this year. Jack McPhail, Appear on Athlete, he's over on the Alps Tour. He started the season last week. Unfortunately, missed the cut in his first event, but he also has 2 Challenge Tour starts this year, Jack. So looking forward to watching his progress. Dan Croft, who is the head coach over at the Appear on Academy, doing very well with the Appear on Academy stuff. He's playing Clutch, Tartan and PJ North events this year, and he's just over in Portugal. Won the PJ Pro-Am yesterday, so congratulations to Dan on winning that. Jack Brooks, James Bailey, Hayden Stanistreet Tyre, Joe Brooks, all playing Clutch Tour this year. Adam Chapman, he's got some Challenge Tour starts to coincide with another season on the Tartan Tour after finishing 10th last year.
We'll come
year
on to Chappy in a minute.
I was going
to
say, when you just got back from Portugal, haven't you? Keelan Crawford, Paul Kinnear, Tim Ford and Max Baxendale, they're the pros that we're going to be supporting this year through the Appear on Athlete program from an amateur perspective.
What about Kevin Whittaker?
Are you taking a row? Are you going for it?
when I tell you about my story about the old course, I might do.
It's one way to tarnish your reputation. Like. amateur-wise, playing on the EDGA tour again this year, Jason Croucher. Obviously, we're supporting him on his journey. We've got 6 amateurs as well that we're supporting. Andrew Haswell, unbelievable elite amateur who plays locally to us. Ellis Willett, Jack Williams, Mia Clark, who's over in America enjoying a golf scholarship at the moment, and then 2 of our younger athletes, young Aaron Edwards and Ollie Cartwright, who play the European and World Championships and are over at the Tommy Fleetwood Academy. So that's 18 appearing athletes in total this year that we'll be supporting with some free clothing, and as and when appropriate we'll be supporting them financially as well.
Can we bet on one of them to win a major?
Go on, like, who'd you go for?
Probably Aaron or Chappers. Given the, like, it's not financial at the minute, but just given, especially with the younger lads, giving them we've probably said this before on the podcast, but giving them a thing where they called an athlete. Like, little Aaron went to bed, was saying to his dad, like, I feel like Messi and Ronaldo, like, I'm an athlete, I've got...
Yeah, of course, yeah.
It stills that belief in them, and you don't know where they can go with that.
No, definitely, and I think what's good, we'll come on to obviously talking about the Kenyan Open and the Mexican Open later, but what's good about bringing the athletes to light on this episode and our first one back for a while and talking about the different storylines that have happened across the European Tour and the PGA Tour this week, it sort of coincides with what we want to do. We obviously... The purpose of creating the athlete program to start with was obviously to support young talent, but it was because the case studies from the interviews that we had on the podcast was evident that, you know, certain talent only comes to fruition when time lapses. So these guys need the time. And obviously what the program is hoping to do in years to come is to give guys that we pick out as talented stars the opportunity to fulfill those talents over a prolonged period of time. But yeah, so you know, we're looking forward to supporting them this year and beyond, really. And then we'll see how they go.
So just to give it another little update on Adam Chapman, I've just been played a pro-am with him in Portugal. We played
Golfing Days, wasn't it?
Golfing Days pro-am, yeah. We played Ombria, which is a brand new course in Portugal. I probably asked 40 people, what was this before it was a golf course? Like, no one had an answer for me. I think it was just trees. But because the standard of golf in Portugal is unreal. Like, you've got the Quintas, you've got the Dom Pedros. Like, it's always immaculate. The weather's great, isn't it?
Yeah. Golf in paradise.
What they've done with this one is on the front nine, like, 3 of the holes are just, well, one of the par threes is like 60, 70 yards above every other hole, like just across the mountain. But it's like you're still driving across the mountain. And then you come to the next par three and it's like 60 yards downhill. Another one of the tee shots is another 60 yard downhill. And like they've sort of like tried to make it a bit memorable.
Yeah.
I think that's what they've done. I haven't spoke to the architect. Work. Oh, I will never forget it. Like made the two on the 60 yard downhill, made the two, like basically in golfing days, if you make it two twos in your team, you're into the two sweep. So whether you make five twos or you make two, it doesn't matter. Like
you just have to make two to get a share of the pot.
Two twos, yeah. And so basically, like I was
anyone on the team,
anyone on the team, yeah, pro, anyone. So this girl who had in our team, Zoe Wilson, she hit a shot to like 2 foot on one of the par threes, knocked it in, and then she knocked the next one again on the 60 yard downhill to like 2 foot, and then I had like a 25 footer, and I've just drained it like before it to get it in the twos. But the morale of it, like we didn't have that many shots to play with. Like I was off two, Zoe's off six, and Mark was off seven. Obviously, Chap was off scratch. So we didn't have that many shots to play with, but we all just used the shots well.
Yeah.
Like
opposite to what I would do then.
The first day I parred me one and two, made like four birdies. So that adds to the team total. Chappers was making birdies when I wasn't. Like Mark made a couple of birdies. It was just amazing. And we ended up winning the first day.
Yeah.
Pro sweep got like with the two, we had two twos as well, won like 350 quid or something. So that just builds up a nice little kitty. And then when we played a few days, like I've never seen anyone hit the ball like Chappers. Like he's 80 past me. He'd be 180 past you.
I knew that was coming.
No, it's just a joke. Like, and he just bangs it out there. Like he's just like he lost his head a little bit in a couple of rounds where he's starting off on easy holes, and if he's not like five under. He's like, well, my 10 under's gone now, so I'm bored. I'm like, what? So like, what are you saying? Like, my 10 under's gone. But on the contrary, that's we end up coming second in the team overall. We won like £200 vouchers each. Chap has come like sixth overall, won 500 quid or whatever. So it was a good overall thing. So as soon as I left, which people are saying, like, obviously Chap has lost his drinking partner now, so he's going to do well. He goes out and shoots 900 in a 30-mile-an-hour wind round Laranjal.
So it was you?
It probably was, but he was saying, like, he's a feel golfer.
Yeah.
So if he's got, like, good feels on a hole, he'll do what he done last time. So the last time he played Laranjal was that when I had the... Remember when I was out there last, but wasn't playing with him, and he had a putt on the last for 10-under.
Yeah.
And he shot 9-under.
Yeah, yeah. And then you out with Kim, wasn't
he? Yeah, and he's went out with... Again, with the same feels, and he shot 9-under again.
Unbelievable.
Like, it's mad, the mental difference. So, he's got a four-shot lead going in tomorrow in another Golfing Days Pro-Am. And he's
back-to-back Pro-Am wins for the athletes there,
and he's playing the old course, which if he could get it going around there easily.
Yeah.
I shot 1-under myself, tied with him on the last round. Like, everyone was like, how did the team get on? I was like, I shot 1-under around the old course. And they do like
all about Kev, was it?
The lads were like, well, there was 3 8-unders as pros, like, so it wasn't exactly playing hard, was it? I was like, you know, but I shot 1-under, mate.
I am a pro.
It was the first time I broke par in a while.
Yeah.
So I've got feels. Yeah. I've got confidence going into the season.
That's it.
The Open qualifying's on and everything again.
They run them, don't they? February, March, and then November as well, don't they?
And then they run them through the UK as well in the summer.
Oh, good, yeah.
Very well run. Nice website. Staff are great.
Brilliant.
It was really... I'll be back.
I'm looking forward to my invite next time.
Yeah, you just want to get yourself there, mate.
Get my own team.
Yeah. You can come as my team. But no, it was a great week, and we will keep an eye on how Chappers goes next week, and we'll be back to report on that one.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to... Well, I forgot to mention it. Maybe we're going to get the appearing athletes on the podcast as well, do some segments just so... Anybody who's interested, you know, we're going to be following the progress of all of the athletes, but it'd be good to get them on just to tell their story as part of the professional series, which we've sort of...
We've done Tim.
Neglected, haven't we?
We've done Paul.
Done Crofty. Yeah.
We
can get Jack McPhail on to talk about the Alps tour, what he's travelling over
there.
We've
done Joe Brooks as well, and we've done a few, but we'll just reintroduce everyone and get it...
Yeah.
Get it a proper segment where I'm keep up to date with the scores and what's going on.
Definitely.
So then people can follow them and share their success.
Yeah, so enough about us anyway. That's where we've been. We've been over to Florida. Kev's done Thailand and Portugal in between that trip to Florida. You're back now for a bit, are you?
I'm back for a bit, yeah.
There we go. So, yeah, no, we're going to be back doing podcasts each week. Obviously, since we've had a bit of time off to look back and reflect on the podcast, we've made a few changes. We're going to be introducing a new segment this week with Stu from SJP Golf Tips. That'll be later on. Essentially, we'll be reviewing the events across the PGA Tour and the DP World Tour, and we'll give you some more information about how you can sign up to his Golf Tips program later on in the show. We're going to change the birdie bogey bust segment slightly. We usually would go for a birdie bogey bust each. Now what we're going to be doing is discussing the birdie bogey bust prior to the podcast, aren't we? And then debating it out.
Yeah. Because like we found last year, a lot of them were the same.
Yeah.
Like you just couldn't differentiate, and yeah, we were scratching around to find something else. It's like, let's just be a team.
That's it. And other than that, obviously there's no fancy golf league at the moment. We have big plans for that, but unfortunately development has been slowed down to non-existent, hasn't it? Obviously other priorities have been going on as well, so we will try and get that back up and running, but in the meantime we've got the SJP golf tips to look forward to obviously give you guys a bit of insight into what's going on in the golfing world. And then obviously, yeah, the usual stuff, the golf news and reviews. So should we start with what's been going on since we've been gone? A lot's happened, hasn't it?
A lot's happened. I'm a bit blindsided by Tiger Woods, me. As soon as anything that he's been up to has just been gold for me.
Yeah.
Just even down to like not being with Nike anymore, new clothing brand, teeing it up.
Well, that's the it's, let's like start it's... with let's start with the leaving Nike, because it comes a bit of a shock. I know the rumor mill circulates in the golf media, doesn't it? Some of it's a load of waffle, some of it is bang on. I didn't know what to believe with the Tiger Nike thing. I just couldn't in my head comprehend Tiger not wearing the red Nike polo shirt on a Sunday. It's just so trademark.
Well, it was always thought about in the golf world that he was going to be with until he died because of what they've done for him.
Yeah.
So for him to, obviously it must have been Phil Knight that done it to him, not actually being at the company anymore, would have a big part to play in him leaving. But
yeah,
obviously behind the scenes, you don't know what's been said, you don't know what's going on, you don't know what negotiations are like, you don't know if they think they're moving out to space or you don't think Tiger's got the pull.
Well, they're still signing players, aren't they? And Tiger's not seen as often as well, is he? Do you know what I mean? So yeah, it's like, what are they paying him compared to what are they getting in return for him? Because when he does play, it's good. But like we've seen at Riviera, we only got to see him for 1.5 rounds when we thought we were seeing him for 4, albeit because of illness. But he even said going down 18 when he had that shank about his back spasms, wasn't
it? Yeah, that was the most worrying thing for me, that.
Was it?
The back spasms, because it's like, okay, illness, it's a one-off. Like, a shank can happen. But a shank because of a back spasm that he'd been feeling for 2 holes didn't put us in. I wasn't confident in him finishing the round anyway, and then he withdrew with illness. I was just like, oh, not again.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Not again.
It's put him
in jeopardy for the talk about him not missing the Masters.
Because of his illness?
No, just because he's not fit.
Ah, okay. So, interesting. But no, it was, like you say, going back to the Nike split, it was shocking news, obviously, to hear that. But then obviously there was this big anticipation about, well, what's he going to do next? What's he going to wear? You know, we sent him a message. Do you want to wear
he a beard? Did, yeah.
Didn't get nothing back, but understandably, when he releases Sunday red clothing, let's have your opinions on that.
Don't know what to think of it, me.
Nah.
The logo needs brushing up.
Yeah. It's got 15 lines to represent as 15 majors, hasn't it?
Is that what it is?
That's what it is, yeah. In the obviously silhouette of a tiger.
Yeah. I don't know. I just for me.
No. I'm the same. I just don't think. Yeah, I mean,
there's so many other logos you could have went with.
Yeah, and Sunday Red as well. Yeah.
Like the silhouette, like Michael Jordan.
We know this because we know the process that goes through trying to come up with a name, trying to come up with a story that sits behind the name. Now, when Tiger brings out a brand, there's not that much marketing that needs to be done.
Well, all he called his restaurant, The Woods Jupiter, and it attracts everyone.
Yeah.
And it's like, why don't you call your brand The Woods? Or like,
why didn't he keep the TW logo? Because that is
TW or the silhouette, anything. Yeah. Bought, anything bought, I think.
Anything bought, what anything he's got.
Yeah. I'd have sold him a peer on if you wanted. But you'll say so.
Yeah, there we go. But yeah, I agree. I think, like I said, we know what it takes to, you know, to try and get a name, a story that sits behind the name and a vision. Now, obviously, we're starting from scratch and we've got to sort of build that reputation and build that trust in the market. Whereas, like, if Tiger's wearing something, there's your trust in the market, isn't it? Straight away, he's like, you know, Tiger wears it, people are buying it anyway. So they've probably already sold half of what they've ordered. But yeah, I just think, I don't know, I think it could have went a bit further than Sunday Red, splitting the sun and Sunday into two words as well. I just don't get the element of that.
No.
Logo, I understand the 15 lines and the tiger being
there. You've got 15 lines to work with. They could have been orchestrated so much better.
Yeah.
Than a...
They just phoned me. I had to put my bills on. I had them sorted in a week.
That's it. Like I said, they're just putting lines in between the Slazenger logo and making it into like a mad looking tiger. It's like, yeah. It's just, I don't know. I'm just not a fan. Like, even like it all seems a bit rushed.
Yeah.
Like the company was registered in December. It's the badges are offset, like off center. The buttons
maybe
are...
that's just what it was. Maybe it was just let's get something made and done
till he edit, short yeah, term until,
while I have a think about what I want to do and when I want to approach a peer on, maybe
even logo positions and like just give us a bell tag and we'll sort you out.
We'll sort you out, mate. Yeah, I've got a good little red, black, white.
That's a nice one, that yeah. Imagine the red multi at the Masters.
That's
wow.
What I'm saying. I know. Final day. Yeah, green jacket with the red multi. Talk to me.
Really? Or the camo.
Oh,
the new camo one that's landing.
Stop it. So, in addition to obviously Tiger news and what's going on, LIV Golf has restarted. And since we've been off air, John Rahm and Tyrrell Hatton have decided to create Legion 13 and jump over to LIV.
Yeah.
Massive mad news. One.
And then Hovland teetering. Obviously, he's teetered up at the Genesis to sort of put the rumours to bed. But as John Rahm showed, nothing's dead till it's dead, never.
Yeah, well, you know, you're starting to look at the fields now. You look at LIV Golf's field week in, week out. It's strong, isn't it? Especially with the addition of John Rahm and what's going on. And then you look at the PGA Tour events. Now, the PGA Tour schedule is a lot busier, but the top players in the world are not going to play every week. So what it does, it leaves you in a position where you're going to have a more weakened field, albeit good storylines still come from those events. But in the past, in my view anyway, PGA Tour's always had an advantage over LIV if they've went head-to-head because of the field and because of like the history behind the event. And, you know, it's 4 days stroke play with a cut. And I've obviously prefer that traditional side of things. But now I'm leaning more towards like the LIV Golf because the strength of field is getting stronger. We're more used to seeing that sort of 3-day 54 hole no cut, the team element sort of getting used to it. I don't know what do you think?
Well, I think as well, do you know another thing that's adds to your point is you know every player,
yeah,
and you get to know them,
yeah,
and you see them on social media and they're bobbing about. Whereas, like, no offense, but Jake Knapp comes along this week. And you're like people might not know who he is at all, or like you get people playing and you think, oh, like there's three rookies have won this year.
Yeah.
Okay, three rookies have won. Great. And there might be storylines in the future. But even from world 30 down, if you asked your average golfer like to pick some of them out of a lineup, I don't reckon they'd be able to match the faces with the names. They might have seen a Patrick Rogers, they might have seen a Wesley Bryant, but they wouldn't be able to match the faces to the names. Whereas with LIV, I believe that they will be able to.
Yeah, exactly. And you just mentioned there as well, obviously from 30 and above, but you can even look 30 below now. Matthew Pevon, who's had an unbelievable start of the season on the PGA Tour, he's world number 24 now. Albeit he has had a fantastic season so far. He's not the 24th best player in the world.
No way.
So, you know, it goes back to that point of the world ranking system. You know, what's that for at the moment? And that's the leader in major championships.
Yeah. I think the Masters have done a good one by inviting Joaquin Neiman.
Yeah.
That's a domino there.
Definitely they have, and that's you know, that breaks the mold, and it was warranted and it was deserved. But then you've got to ask yourself, if it comes down to invite only for LIV players, you've got to think of the players that are missing out, and the major championships are there for the best players in the world to meet to win a major. So, like, there's players on LIV Golf now who deserve a chance to play at the Masters who are not there.
100%.
All right, you're still coming up against the best players in the world, albeit a couple. But you'd want them all there, wouldn't you?
I think you do. And I think that obviously the deal with the PIF and all that's been extended, hasn't it? It was meant to be closed on the
31st. Yeah, it's April time now.
And they're coming with whatever money they come with, the PGA Tour are sort of holding the cards to the chest, saying that the money that they can match the money
they
got investment,
now. Didn't they? Yeah.
And Tiger and Spieth and all that are coming out saying it could be good. It's yet to be seen what would happen. They'd welcome it if it came. So everyone's sort of changing the tune a little bit.
Rory more than anyone.
Maybe is that to try and drag more money out of them? Is it to make it more lucrative when they do come? Maybe the PGA Tour more control. It remains to be seen. But at the end of the day, from my personal opinion, if I was a golfer, I would be saying, like, let's just get this over with.
Yeah, definitely. Like, you want to put a line
under it, like Everton's point deduction. Like, see, we get 10 off, 6 back, 6 gone again, another investor. Just come on.
Yeah, well, that's
just
it.
What is happening?
Everton's prime example, would they take 10 off us? They give us 4 back today. We're buzzing with 4 back, but we're still pissed off with 6. But we're half happy that it's just done with now. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's no additional appeal that can happen. They've said 6 is the marker. All right, that's fine, as long as you don't give us another 6 off this
well,
other.
Well, that's the next charge, sanction. And you got Forrest. Then, like, I know, just to talk football, but more they're saying that it goes to, like, the 25th of May, which is, like, after the season when it's going to be done. So the season can actually finish, and then the whole table can change.
Well, that's it. Like, and
this is the sort of up in the
control,
air in
isn't
sport
it?
That's happening across the board.
Yeah, because VAR is massive as well, isn't it? You know, like, you've got people making these decisions for VAR, and you've got, like, this panel who will make a decision on if Everton survive by 5 points, and then, you know, 3 days after the season's finished, they take 6 off us, then people are deciding that Everton are relegated, and it's not based on merit. It's happened on a football pitch. It's happened based on, you know, the rules and regulations that sit behind football.
But, well, it's like the major champions now isn't based on merit. It's based on you were allowed to play. Like,
this is the point. Yeah, like, this is it. This is exactly it.
Like, someone could get hot on live, deserve a Masters shot, or deserve a shot in the Open, doesn't get to play.
Yeah.
And you could hit form and emulate Tiger in 2000. You just don't know.
Well, that's it. And it's good to see the amateurs. You know, we spoke about Eugenio Chicara and his rise and what he's done. Obviously, he's had a bit of a slow start this season, but winning on live last year, you know, did he win on an Asian Tour event? Or I know he played well. I can't remember whether he won one of those. But then you've got Caleb Surratt, who's coming on. He's on John Rahm's team with Tyrrell Hatton. You know, he's being nurtured by two world-class players, one of the best in the world. But it's like, for Caleb Surratt, you look at the rise of Ludvig Åberg, right, and what he's done. You know, won DP World Tour, won PGA Tour, played in the Ryder Cup, all within months of and bursting onto the scene. Absolute superstar. We're going to see him for years to come. But it's like, because of the hindrance to what's happening at LIV, are we going to be able to appreciate Caleb in majors? I don't think we are. I don't think he's going to get the opportunity to play his way into a major, whereas Ludvig Åberg gets his opportunity to play. And all right, Surratt hasn't won a live event yet, so I'm not saying he deserves to play the Masters this year. But what I mean is, Åberg has earned his position into Augusta this year by winning on the PGA Tour. But then so is Jake Knapp, so is Matthew Pavon. They're all getting to play the Masters because they've won on the PGA Tour, which is that pathway, which has always been there and it should stay there. But I just think we're at a position now where there needs to be some form of pathway for LIV players to get into. If we're going to see proper major championships.
Well, that's it. I think just basically, when I was comparing it to football there, it's basically, you just want to know where they stand, where does everyone stand, what goes on, where's the deal at? Because the Masters can pass, and then it's April, the decision gets made, and then people have missed out if they all join up.
Yeah.
And then, like, on the other hand, people have missed out by not going to live because they didn't go because of the world ranking, and they can even get into the events. They're allowed back on the PGA Tour if they qualify. One good thing I will say that's come from the live whole thing, PGA Tour banning the players, is it's directed a lot of players to the Asian Tour, the International Series, things like that, that you wouldn't necessarily see them teeing it up in that.
Oh, yeah, and I think especially with the support that the Asian Tour is getting financially, you know, that tour elevates, then you're getting to see more Asian people come through that route. Like you say, DP World Tour is, you know, it's suffering slightly in some aspects, but in other aspects, it's thriving. You know, you got to look at Sami Valmaki, you know, a couple of years ago, I think he finished 160th on the DP World Tour rankings, nearly won a PGA Tour event this past week.
Yeah.
Only for an unbelievable performance by Jake Knapp. So, and that would have been him in the major championships and, you know, securing his card till 2026, playing all the elevated events like Jake Knapp's going to be. So, yeah, I think there's I don't see
that loses, someone gains, don't they? With that yin yang balance that's off, it's golf's like losing, sort of, because there's always going to be a negative. Whereas if it was all joined up and everyone was together, like we've always spoke about, it just makes it so much better.
Yeah, like, you know, you can see the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour have got things tied in, haven't they, with the partnership and the pathways up to the PGA Tour, which, you know, people agree with, people don't agree with. You're taking your best players against away from the DP World Tour. Where's that going to leave the DP World Tour in years to come? Sami Valmaki and McIntyre, Pavon, they're all prime examples of week in, week out. They're playing the PGA Tour now. Valmaki won $800,000 this week. The money aspect is life-changing, but then again, the money aspect for going to live is life-changing as well. Exactly. So you can't hold that against. I think John Rahm's come out. I've not read the full article, but just reading headlines is that he's come out and said now that his reason for going to live was to play less and the money.
He said he's getting well more for earning the same, playing the same sport, but more time off.
That's it.
Like, why? Like, he has to be honest with himself and admit that that was a contributing factor to it, and that was the main reason.
Yeah.
Which is like, fair play, like Dustin Johnson once said them exact words. Like, there you go.
Yeah, exactly. And I think what we're going to, this year is massive for golf, isn't it? You know, we've got the PGA Tour trying a new schedule. We've got the DP World Tour trying the new schedule with the International Series, which is running now. Then you've got the different swings, Asian Swing next, I think it is. So it'd be interesting to see how that all plays out with, you know, the players progressing to the PGA Tour. Who's going to come back down to the DP World Tour, and then, you know, what's the next crop of talent that's going to come up through it, because it's going to offer more opportunities. Just the missing piece is, you know, what are we going to do about these talented players on LIV and the major championships? That's the one. World ranking points I can sort of get over, because, you know, I think we all know now the world ranking system, it's not...
No one believes it.
That's what I mean. It's got to a point now where, like, you know, you can't say someone's the best player in the world now because the world number one in the rankings because of a lot of these top class players.
I don't know, Scheffler's like pretty nailed it anyway.
Yeah, but there's an argument that John Rahm is better than him, or Cam Smith.
Yeah.
You know, Cam Smith was world number 2-3 when he left.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? If Cam Smith, if LIV didn't exist and Cam Smith never went, you know,
would
he have been trending?
Yeah,
so,
no, it's right.
I think world ranking points and system, I could probably deal with not getting resolved if it didn't, but I think what we really need to get on top of is, or what the powers to be need to get on top of, is the making sure that the best players in the world play the major championships. That's key.
Well, that's it, because there's always going to have someone going to argue that, well, they weren't there, so
yeah,
you might not have won that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just, I feel like, I don't know, I think you might have a bit more information than me, so I'm just going to try a new little segment of just a weekly winners roundup.
Yeah, go on. Yeah, we'll go to Kenya Open first. I've got some info on a couple of the players that I want to speak about.
So, Darius van Driel,
won
by 2 from Joe Dean and the DP World Tour in Kenya.
So yeah, just so on the name you mentioned there, Joe Dean, he entered the tournament world number 2,930, and entered the tournament as a part-time delivery driver for Morrison's.
Legend.
He got his DP World Tour card through Q School.
Mm-hmm.
Couldn't afford the traveling to play prior to the Qatar Masters in February. Played the Qatar Masters, played the Kenya Open, and now he's just walked away with a life-changing check of £170,000. And up to last week was doing deliveries for Morrison as part-time to earn some money. So stories like that.
And they got slapped with a P45 on Sunday night or what?
Text message, yeah. Sorry, guys, I won't be in for my deliveries Monday. But no, it's brilliant because that's, you know, that pays the way.
A strong English talent coming through as well.
That's it. You know, he's 29 years of age. It's another example of the pathways that need to be created, because, you know, it's pretty obvious there. It could just be, you know, he's had a really good week. But if that was the case, he wouldn't have got through all those rounds in Q school and got his card. So there's obviously talent there. How long has he... I don't know his backstory that much, but how long has he been grafting in order to get to this point as a 29-year-old? You know, and at what point, if you're doing delivery driving for Morrison's part-time to fund it...
You've got one eye on the clubs in the closet, haven't you? Or,
that's like, what I'm thinking, surely. Yeah. How much more time was he giving himself? You know, if he wouldn't have got to Q School, would he have... thought, you know what, I'm going to give this one last go. How many times should I give it one last go?
You drop down, you try Q school, you go play clutch, and then you just Start playing casually.
So now, obviously, he's already got his card for this year. Now he's got the money that sits behind it to fund it for the full year. So it'll be interesting to see, obviously, where Joe goes. Now we'll be keeping an eye on him throughout it. But yeah, Darius van Driel, again, 34 years of age. He lost his card last season, but like Dean, regained it in Q school. And now, obviously, he's gone on to win. He started in 2015 on the Alps Tour. Obtained his card through Q School and turned professional. It's obviously took him what, from 2015 to now, almost 10 years to get his breakthrough win on the top tour. So it does. They're just another example of how long
time
it takes.
You need time, yeah. Exactly.
But the biggest story at the Kenyan Open was from Ronald Rugumeo. So obviously he comes out 31 years of age, the first ever golfer from Uganda to make the cut on the DP World Tour. His name's forever in the history books in golf.
Side door as well, wasn't it?
Side door.
Wow.
It was like
everyone pulled it in, didn't they? It was amazing.
Yeah. It come out afterwards and said, obviously, he's so grateful for Kenyans, his fellow Ugandans, who flew all the way to watch him. But then he's like, honestly, it's not about me as a player. It's not about Uganda. It's about East Africa. Everything that he's doing for East Africa. So again, it's just about the DP World Tour taking an event to Kenya, gives Ronald the opportunity to play the event. And then, you know, look at this now and you know, the storylines that it's creating.
Well, exactly. You talk about the rise of obviously Liv over in Asia and growing the Asian tour, but there's a whole other part of the world there where golf probably isn't as accessible.
Yeah.
But it's him holding the torch and flying the flag. It inspires kids everywhere. And you see that 10-year thing, don't you, where a bit more funding, a bit more money goes into it. You don't know where the talent's come from.
No, definitely not, no. Obviously, Ewan had a good finish as well. We like to talk about previous podcast guests. He finished sixth at the event. So, and obviously look forward to the event in South Africa, a couple of events in South Africa now to finish the international series. And obviously we'll be talking later in the show with Stu about that event.
Yeah, well, like we mentioned before as well, Jake Knapp won the Mexico Open by 2 from Sam Valmaki and become the third rookie to win this season, which equals the total amount of rookies that won the whole of last season.
Yeah. But you can see why, can't you? Because the top players are dropping out of these events, which gives them
a chance.
The opportunities, yeah. I mean, you know, last year you would see at least 5, 6, 7, maybe 10 of the top 50 in the world will play these events. Yeah. Now, I mean, you look at the leaderboards and who's making you switch it on and watch it apart from the storyline. This is where it'd be interesting to see the Honda Classic this week.
The what?
The Kozniak, whatever it's called. New name. It'd be interesting to see this week.
Is that not a new event?
At the PGA National. Because obviously it's a full field event, 4 day. It's not an elevated event. So this is probably the first tournament this year, the start of the Florida Swing, where we're going to see
your Rorys, your bigger boys, bigger boys
at a proper event. You know what I mean? Like not a shortened field thing. So yeah, looking forward to it. You know the story about Jake Knapp?
I know that is. Girlfriend flew out after the final round because he FaceTimed and said, if I'm leading, you have to come out.
It wasn't that, no.
She kissed him on the green.
It's just another story of part-time players. So he was...
Oh, he's a bouncer or something?
Yeah, he's a bouncer, yeah. Sick. While he's playing on the Canadian tour.
He told me not to get in the club. Just get out of my way, lads.
Yeah, former bouncer, turned PGA Tour champion now. So obviously he gets his trip to Augusta. Which is unbelievable for him, isn't it?
No, it's amazing.
Talk about
exactly
turning your life around. But yeah, so, I mean, you know, if we talk about the stories, what we've heard, they're going back to the podcast, the European Athlete Programme, Sal Valmaki, one of the PGA Tour graduates that went from DP World Tour, one of the DP World Tour graduates that went as part of that top 10 going over and getting a PGA Tour card. He's the first ever player from Finland to obtain a PGA Tour card, so a bit of history there. Previous to last season when he'd done well, he'd played 95 events, made 59 cuts, had 2 wins, and had earned just under €3 million. As I mentioned before, he earned just under $1 million at this event this week. In 2021, he was ranked 159th on the DP World Tour. In 2022, he was ranked 100th on the DP World Tour. And then last season, he finished 12th overall, which was good enough to get one of the 10 cards. And obviously this past week nearly wins. So again, it's just testament that, like, doesn't matter where you are in your ability now, you know, if you get the opportunity to keep going and keep progressing, you know,
of course,
doors, like, will open for you.
Coming 160th, or like, how many mistakes have you made? How many things could you have done better? Like, you're out in your first season and win everything, or you win loads, like an A-Bear's done there. Like, are you getting put onto a bit of a cloud of, like, this isn't real life? And then when the struggles come, you don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Because you fell from grace instead of grounding your way up gradually.
Yeah.
So,
well, it's yeah. There's not many Rory McIlroy's, Tiger Woods's, possibly at A-Bear now, when you're seeing the potential that he's got, that will come onto the scene and will win and will stay at the top level for so long. Tiger done it. Rory's done it. Before him, Faldo done it. Greg Norman done it. You know, there's these names that, you know, they transcend the game because of their ability, and they're up there, and that's what makes you tune in and watch every week, because you're thinking, you know, how's he going to play this week?
Well, people heard about you that outside golf, that only see Sky Sports News or something like that, because he's done all that before he's even played in a major.
That's it. And but we've mentioned five or six names there, and there's tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of golfers who are at the elite level in the game, all trying to do that. So it does take time.
How many percent?
And it's not only about having the patience and obviously letting your abilities shine, but it's about having that support mechanism that sits behind you. And again, obviously going on about it again, but that's what we want to do with the Appearing Athlete program, is to have that platform which allows players to pursue the dream and fulfill their true abilities.
Of course. And then another tournament. When would you ever hear this for an Asian tour event? Carlos Ortiz shoots 65 to hold off Louis Oosthuizen and Joaquim Neiman to win the International Series in Oman.
Yeah.
You just don't hear that if there's no live.
Well, that's it. But
they're just not there.
Well, that's it. Well, this is there's that. So that's obviously making the Asian tour progress. You know, especially now that there's pathways from the Asian Tour to LIV.
Mm-hmm.
You get a spot on LIV. Ogletree was a prime example of that. This is where the conflict between the PGA Tour and the LIV Tour come in. You know, how many world ranking points are they getting for that event? Probably minimal.
Four.
There you go. So, you know, and how many world ranking points is Jake Knapp getting for winning the PGA Tour?
Exactly.
You know, who's better, Ortiz or Knapp?
Ortiz, isn't it, I'd say.
Right then, so that covers us for the golf. Obviously, it's that time again, y'all.
So I know we said we were going to do a joint birdie bogey bust, but I've just got to slide in an extra birdie.
Go on, let's have your additional birdie then.
Okay.
Breaking tradition before we even start. 18th
at the, because I forgot to mention it, and what? I just have to mention it.
It's a personal one.
No, well, it's personal, but it was my team. Okay. So 18th at the Old Course.
Yeah.
We're both coming down. Zoe and Mark got shots. I've hit it left a little bit, blocked out by a tree. Play this unbelievable 9-9 to about 20 foot. Like, I'm there. So we dropped a shot on 17, so we knew we needed to pick up two at least. So I was in good position. And then Mark's hit a shot just short of the green, and then sort of duffed his chip just short. Zoe's hit one into the trees, punched one out, chipped it up to like 35 foot. So we're like, we're not exactly in position A to get the 2 points, but we're definitely making 4 points on the hole. Anyway, Mark rolls one in from like 45 foot, and we're running around, jumping around, get in and all that. Come on, like one half of the job done. And then Zoe from like 35 foot rolls it in as well, and we were like, God! It was 17 points to the team, but we were celebrating. We thought that'd be good enough to win the day.
Yeah,
we didn't think we'd win the thing because the other group were 8 ahead. As it turns out, someone had like 19 points, someone had 21 points, like 21 under. It's like, what, like, not much more we could have done. But when we looked at the team that come third, we come second by one.
Oh, so that
point was, oh, it was God. That bad. It was put. The under, yeah. And then obviously, before the fell to me, I would have knocked it in back of the cup.
You didn't have to.
It took the reins.
It's payback for you taking Zoe's bit.
Zoe's, yeah, I would have given it, honestly. I just dobbed it up to like 3 foot and picked it up.
Give me, that's mine. I'm having
that. Tapped it in, but it was just, it was the, like, obviously, you don't know the magnitude because you can't see a live leaderboard, but
yeah.
Like, we just didn't give up, and it was real, like, camaraderie, jumping around, high fives, like, Well, Chappers wasn't that happy when he shot one on the leg, but he was he was invited. I think the team, how happy the team were getting about like Team Birdies, and it dragged them along.
Team sport's unbelievable.
Oh, it like, is.
You know, at every level.
That's why I was saying Liv should play in the teams.
Yeah.
Remember? Or at least have two every time to sort of switch them around, because the like the high-fiving and the like, and you're playing individually and you're playing against them, but if there's more emphasis on the team than the individual, there's nothing better than and then you get behind them then.
Yeah.
Like people would have got behind us the way we were acting, because people were coming in going, did you break the course record? And we're like, why? All we could hear was cheers. I'm like, that was so, you just kept rolling them in from 60 foot, mate.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's like the team element in golf, it's special in it, because, you know, the Ryder Cup, Solheim Cup, President's Cup are all prime examples of it.
Exactly.
Even when you go into like the, you know, the Warhol Cup, the Arnold Palmer Cup, all these type of team championships, college golf in America, and now Liv are the first sort of group that are starting to bring it into the professional game full time. I've got to admit, I don't think it works in its current format, just because there's too much going on with the team and the individual, and you know, you've got potential where some. I think what they should do, right? So let's hear this out. I think what they should do is, you have a team event, as it is for the first two rounds.
Oh yeah.
And then the leading individual qualifies to play the final round on the Sunday for the championship, and you're all playing your teams.
Yeah.
So essentially, like,
you're all cheating on the one player.
You're all cheating on that one player, but you're all, because it's three to count out of four on the final day. Or is it all to count? That's three, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is it all? I think it's all to count.
All to count final day, yeah.
So everybody's got a count and got a play, so you're getting behind each other for that. But you're never going to have that clash where two teammates are vying for the championship. You've got two.
You get
so
one representative.
Yeah.
That's good, that.
So you've got a three-day...
I think a few things need trialing.
Yeah. So you've got a three-day event. After 2 days, if Matt Wolf is the leading...
player.
Leading player, then the other three can't play for the individual championship on the Sunday, but all four of them play together for the Range Goats, and all four of them are in it for the team with the support of Matt Wolf in that final round, because he's going for the individual championship.
No, I'm backing it, you know.
I'm backing that. I think that's the only way that we're going to see. And then you're sort of then incorporating a cut, aren't you?
Yeah.
Because you're essentially cutting the field to 16 players. You can win the individual.
Exactly.
But you've got to earn your way
and
to the...
I think that camaraderie is massive.
Yeah.
You know, like they just really do.
We've solved Liv there, haven't we?
We have, yeah. Greg, where are you?
Sign us up.
Yeah, so Mexican Open... We'll actually really do the birdie bogey bust in a minute. the Mexican Open, 31 points for Jake Knapp. International Series, 15 points for Carlos Ortiz, and Darius was 12.
Right, so how many did Jake Knapp get?
31.
So double what Ortiz got?
Mm-hmm.
And treble what Van Driel got?
Mm-hmm.
And he's moved up to 52 in the world. Is that
surely that's in there? Maybe, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, Matsuyama there.
Yeah, because Matsuyama went from 55 to 20 in the world. So,
well, look at Matsuyama getting 68 for that, for winning the Genesis.
So, arguably, Carlos Ortiz has won against the stronger field at the International Series in Oman, and he's moved from 1,286th in the world to 237th in the world. It's a nice jump.
Even that's too big, though, isn't it?
Not if you win an event like that, no. No. Like, he shouldn't be at 1,286 to start with.
Exactly, yeah. Like it's.
I think that just goes back to the...
Just, yeah. Yeah, what's he won there? Two world ranking points, what's that? No, WebEx. But yeah, either way, it's flawed, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what we need to know. Okay. It's a birdie bogey bust time.
It's that time again, y'all.
It's that time again, y'all.
The birdie bogey bust, the birdie bogey bust, birdie bogey bust.
So the joint birdie is obviously...
I feel as though, like, when we say obviously, we're thinking Tiger Woods, you know what I mean? It's got to be big Tiger Woods.
No,
news,
it's massive news, though, isn't it?
Anthony Kim returns to professional golf in his first professional appearance in 12 years.
It's mad, isn't it? It's interesting to see how he gets on.
Do you think I will say about this?
What team is he playing in?
Well, he's not. He's gone in a wild card.
Right, okay.
As same as Lottie Canton and Hudson Swafford.
Right.
But obviously, they just need one more play, and you've got another team of four there.
Oh, yeah.
So
can they just join? Can they be day late?
I'm probably too late now. There's too many events, and otherwise, unless they just do it. So it's still growing, isn't it? They're going to change the format to what I said anyway. So.
Oh, yeah. It's very well done.
So, Anthony Kim's first professional appearance in 12 years, but the only caveat to that is he's retaining in Saudi Arabia. That's the event in Jeddah. I just don't know what the crowd's going to be like.
Zero.
That's what I'm thinking, is
We've
it?
We've been there.
No, I know, but... I don't know.
There'll be a few Maesco people around, like...
Would it be better for him to come back a more highly populated event?
Maybe he doesn't want, he doesn't...
Under the radar?
Yeah, he just wants to... Because he'll, for all, like, you don't know what he's going to be playing like.
Yeah.
Because he's been practicing, like, well, obviously he would have been hitting a few balls, wouldn't he? But if he's been injured for how many years, he got his payout.
He's 38 now as well.
Exactly.
That's what you're forgetting. Do you know what I mean? He's 38. Like, I mean, how good would it be if he just come back and just, like, wiped the floor with everyone? Yeah. Was shooting, like... 62s every
like
week.
The way The Rock comes back at SmackDown and beats everyone.
Lays the candy asses off them. Norman's come out. He oozes incredible talent. The world has seen it in the past, and now it's an honour as Commissioner of LIV Golf to give the opportunity for this star to be reborn. Reborn at 38, we'll see. The Wells Fargo Championship in 2012 was his last event. Obviously, he made his biggest name for himself. Obviously, the 2008 Ryder Cup, what he done there in Valhalla. So, yeah, a long time ago, innit? But I'm proper excited.
I am. Bogey is the anticlimax of seeing Tiger Woods on our screen and him having to withdraw because he had an In-N-Out burger.
Do you know what though? If you look at it, it is a bogey. Obviously, the anti-climax. He returns with buzz and hope. And I even said, like, get to see him for 4 days. Wow, this is class. And then obviously, he withdraws. Jordan Spieth gets DQ'd for wrong scoring. So like two of the biggest names in the field.
Yeah, just shadowed it, didn't it?
It's just like, oh, I'm not even watching the rest of this.
Yeah,
it does put a down on it. So yeah, I think that is evident. But will Tiger Woods ever lift a trophy? In your opinion?
Yeah.
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 When?
Whenever, if I have to make one and take it to him and say, you're the best. Pick that up a sec. I just think he will. I think he'll look at Tom Watson scraping it around majors, coming second. And
yeah.
It's like.
It's the four rounds.
He needs the.
It's the four rounds for me.
It'll be a suit like not London or Augusta, or it'll be a St. Andrews. It'll be something like that where he'll just
irons off the
field will fall apart and he'll just
smoke and drive though, isn't he? Dead yeah, straight as well. Yeah, so yeah. Like off the tee,
touch rusty on it.
That's what I mean. But it's always been sharp, so I don't think he'll have a problem. He never has a problem hole and putts. You know, if he gets a short game a bit tighter, I can see it. A
couple of stupid misses, wasn't there, by him as well?
That's a concentration thing, though, isn't it?
Concentration, lack of club and not thinking of every variable, new caddy.
Not playing competitively
like,
for so
there
long.
There were so many things against him.
And you don't think, you're not sure whether he'll be at the Masters?
I just read something saying like it's the shadow cast over it because of his interview about his back and it wasn't really an illness and all that. Like it's, I don't know, there's just, you know, the rumour mill goes, don't you?
Yeah, I think we'll see him back.
I think we will as well. It's only 49 days away, innit?
Yeah, about 48 days now, yeah.
Wow.
I'd like to see a Tiger Woods, Ludwig Eber.
Sunday Red.
Sunday Red, remember?
Sunday
Capital
Red.
Capital D. Bust then. Obviously, it's still in the Woods family.
Yeah.
Obviously, news circulating about some unfavourable fan behaviour at the... pre-qualifier for the Cognizant Classic this
week. Well, that's it. And I think as well, Woods. On top of that, like your social media everywhere, he's shot, 16 over, he's had the 12, yeah. He's had the double, he's had no birdies. People saying like, your dad, the golf gods don't care who your dad is, and all like the negative press that has been jumped on it. And then the stuff comes out like fans demanding him to sign Tiger's book,
yeah.
Like getting too close to him, the security saying move away, people running into the bushes to collect robber's ball and stuff like that. It's like, he's 15 years old.
Yeah.
There are reports of people taking the granddaughters out of school to meet him, and it's just like,
yeah.
Again, he's 15.
Yeah. This is the point.
I mean, if he was playing at West Langs, I'd have been down there robbing his ball. Like,
taking the kids out of school.
With me at Tiger Woods himself to sign it.
No, you're right, though. I mean, you know, you've got to understand that when you carry the Woods name, you are going to get media presence, which is fine. But I think it's being respectful about it, isn't it? You know what I mean? And understanding that he is still only a kid. Let him make his mistakes. All right, it doesn't matter. If he puts himself in a pre-qualifier for a PGA Tour event and your second name's Woods, you're going to have media coverage. Everybody's going to know what you shot.
And I think on the other hand, forget everyone's behaviour, forget everything, forget the social media. Should he have been playing it?
No.
Should he really be there? Maybe if he'd won a couple of big junior events and he's always Tiger just thinking sink or swim, get in there.
Yeah, well, learn the hard way, yeah?
Yeah.
So, you know, if he's learning on these events at these big tournaments at the age of 15, imagine how ready he's going to be when he's 18.
Yeah.
Sometimes honestly, it's better to learn that way than, you know, hitting loads of balls in the range, you know, playing off plus six, going and winning every amateur event and then getting to the pro ranks and crumbling. So,
like, I can only talk like on a smaller scale, but like moving up to them Northern Order Remedies from the club comps and playing open qualifying, like, it's a different game.
Yeah.
It's a completely different game when you're nervous and you've got a scorecard and you just...
But if you turned up in open qualifying 4 years in a row...
Oh, yeah, you're
in your comfort zone, aren't you?
Like,
and I think that's probably the reason that...
He's done it.
He's pushing towards that. Yeah. Is he ready? No, I don't think anybody expected them to qualify, but, I mean, what a storyline it would have been if he would have got
there. When will he be ready, though? Exactly, as you say. Like,
he's 15 and he's got plenty of time. Time on his hands, you know what I mean? Like, you say the 10-year rule, you know, what is it again? 10,000 rule, is it?
No, it's just the
10,000.
Like the 10,000 hours thing, but then there's also the impact of an icon coming through and then the people following them 10 years later because they've put in 10 years of graft. So, like, all the Korean golfers after In G Park come on the scene, then 10 years later, you've seen a crop of Korean golfers come through.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's that sort of...
Same with Swedish golf through Annika Sorensen.
Swedish golf through Annika Sorensen, like it's... Herika Stenson.
I think, you know, in 10 years' time, he's going to be 25 years of age, which is young in golfing terms. So, you know, if he's playing them events
and
now
he's taking all this criticism now, maybe that Tiger knows, like, you're going to get criticism, so you might as well get it now
and
learn how to deal with it.
Yeah, well, I'm here to support you.
Come in and cry to me. And...
Yeah. Be good, though, to see them both teeing up in a big event moment.
Oh, that'd be amazing.
Against each other.
That'd be amazing.
Yeah, quality.
I think that's what's going to keep Tiger going, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Charlie enters an event. He'll just play it anyway, won't he? Because he can. Yeah. No, brilliant. Okay, so... Introducing now this new segment that we've got going, Review with Stu. We'll be speaking to Stu at SJP Golf Tips. So we hope you enjoy this segment. Okay, so this is the new Bogey Boys podcast segment, Review with Stu. We're joined by SJP Golf Tips. How are we, Stu?
All good, thank you. Thank you for having me on and what we're planning to go ahead and bring to everybody.
Let's hope it's a bright and prosperous future for all.
Definitely, yeah.
So obviously, we've introduced this segment on the podcast as obviously you being an expert, you've got your SJP Golf Tips platform. Do you want to just tell us to start with just a little bit more about what SJP Tips Golf Tips is, and obviously how long you've been going for, and a bit of history about what you've been doing over the years?
Yeah, definitely. So always really been interested in golf. Something that I've played and studied now for well over 10 years. And I've been always more interested in kind of delving into numbers, statistics and data. And in and around sort of 2005, 2006, just as we were seeing the end of the top of Tiger Woods's form, a lot of data became more accessible on the internet. PGA Tour websites, European Tour websites started to grasp that data, strokes gained, numbers, percentages, and all of these sorts of mathematics were actually very important within the performance and how players can perform at the highest level. And there was lots of textbooks and books released around there. And rather than sort of studying the swing, studying equipment and golf balls, it became a hobby of mine to have a look at data and why people were successful at certain venues, why people were less successful in different parts of the world, and go, and really leaving no stone unturned as to kind of having a little bit of an edge. And that got me interested. Of course, the only way you can test that is via betting on golf and having tournaments now all over the world. As time's gone on, golf or elite level golf tends to just follow the sun around the globe. So we now have every corner of the world, whether it be South Africa, the rise of Dubai, Qatar, Abu Dhabi, recently Saudi Arabia, and all parts of America with different climates and coasters. Pretty much 51 weeks of the year. The only week is Christmas week when there's not a elite level professional golf event accessible. And early successes, you know, I was able to win quite a little bit of money from it, both myself, close family and friends. And as time went on now, fast forwarding sort of towards 2015, one of the biggest ironies in the country that we live in is as soon as you start taking money off a bookmaker, you begin to get closed down, you begin to be restricted. So it left me with a bit of a decision to make. Do you give up something that you clearly understand and know, or do you reinvent the wheel and maybe profit from that in a different type of way? And I managed to reach out. This was in the early days of where Twitter was quite big and social media was coming of age. A lot of people contacted me who do similar sorts of things with other sports, mainly football and horse racing being the top two, that there's kind of a desire and a demand for this type of thing. And golf was a massive underrepresented kind of market. So I set about doing a lot of things for free. You know, like you guys have done with the brilliant expansion of your clothing brand and the podcast, and gave people kind of information and built up a platform. I built it all myself. It was a little bit of a DIY, a few YouTube videos, and built up like a WordPress website.
Yeah, we've been there.
Yeah, we've been there. And I managed to peak that out at about 28,000 views a week. And I kind of plateaued or at that level with, I recommended a double of two events. It was actually a Challenge Tour event and a European Tour event, as was then, now the DP World Tour. And it was valued at 570-1. So somebody only needed to put £1 on and they won 570. And it was Luke Donald in Switzerland, what is now the European Masters at Cron-Sancerre, and Ryan Fox, who was just graduating from the Challenge Tour at the time. And as you can imagine, Twitter was booming back then with the hashtag mentality. And I became a little bit of an internet hero, because not many people can say that he's going to win that event, he's going to win that event, and make sure you put them both to do it at the same time. And then I was able to then transition quite nicely into what I do now. I'd spent maybe 3 years every single week for 3 years building up and generating a reputation. I got third-party independent proofing done to make sure that, again, doing what I do, it's very important that people just don't take your word for it. There's a lot of work behind the scenes that go into proving that what you do is accurate. I know you guys have been on the distribution list for a while now and know the authenticity behind it, but that's important. And once I've done that, I'm now able to dedicate my time, whether it be lunch hour or in the evenings, going through a variety of different systems, outlets, databases, building upon a Monday, a Tuesday, and then ultimately the day before an event, which would be a Wednesday, you're able to confidently release a small section of tips within a field now, which generally is about 156. A DP World Tour event and a PGA Tour event tend to have 156 people playing. And I never advise more than six. So it's less than 3% of the field. And that's kind of how I got to where I am now.
We know, obviously, when we had a look at the platform and the website, it's an interesting system that you use in terms of points versus pounds. It's not like a straight up, you know, dude, like you bet this and you earn thousands. It's more spread betting, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. So again, at the point of wanting to do this for the long term, I sought a lot of advice, spoke to a lot of people who've done this successfully for a long time. And the reason behind that is relatively quite simple. It's to create a even playing field for everybody. So there might be a person who's part of my website who is a London banker who can afford to bet 50 per bet without even batting an eyelid. But then at the same time, there might be a young 20-year-old who's fresh from university, who's got his first job, and £50 is far too much for him. He might only want to spend £1 or £2 to be comfortable. So by having a point system, one point is exactly the same no matter who you are. But the value of that point then becomes personal to the individual. So the idea being that you stick to a very strict system. You never spend more or less than is advised. But the actual monetary value behind that is personal to the person at the end of the bet. And whether you can afford to lose £20 or whether you can't afford to lose two, you still stick to one point is whatever it is for you. And that also then moves forward without getting too overcomplicated at this stage, is that then forms a percentage of what you have as an initial investment, if you will. So one point should generally be 1% of an initial investment. So I generally advise people to start with 200 points. So if that was £1, that would be £200. If that was £2 per bet, that would be £400, and incremental thereafter. So that allows you to sustain. You know, one thing I'm sure we'll go on to discuss is, you know, based on the fact there's 156 different potential eventualities, you're not going to be correct every single week. I generally average about 20 winners per 51 weeks. Now, because of the odds, they are actually in the favor of the punter within golf, because the bookmakers actually know that there is 156 different things that could happen, and we fancy ourselves to be right more often than we're wrong. So by operating at an average of 20 wins out of 51, that means that you lose 31 times. You lose more than you win. But, you know, as you can probably see from following, your winners, you know, we had Haitong Li to have a hot start in Dubai a few weeks ago. That was 100-1. So you only need one of those to afford 3 weeks of plateauing, maybe having a place rather than a win. And then your fourth or fifth week, you maybe have someone who's 40 or 50-1. And then you not only do you get back all of those losses, you then get even more profit. So it does take a very strong-minded, a lot of willpower to stick with a proven system. You have to be able to sustain not winning for 3 or 4 weeks, knowing that the fifth or the sixth week, you'll get it all back based on data and statistics.
So over the last, since you've like made it like this point system, what's the average end of year points total?
So the average end of year points total is 208 in profit. The highest was 560 and the lowest was 13. But every single one of the 10 have been at a profit. So yeah, and so far in 2024, with the help of the 100-1 winner, we're not behind as things stand. And we had two in the top six last night out of the 156 in America. We had Stephen Jaeger as well as Patrick Rogers, and they were both at a good each way price to be able to get all the money back and go on to bigger things next week.
Thanks for that introduction. There's two parts to doing this segment each week on the podcast. Obviously, one is to give our viewers and listeners the opportunity to sign up with SJP Golf Tips and follow the system themselves. And also it's to provide some insight into your mind and your thought process into why you select these players and what you're looking for at each tournament. So obviously this week we've got a tournament over in South Africa on the DP World Tour. And then we've got the start of the Florida Swing up in Palm Beach on the PGA Tour. So let's get into that then. Obviously, they're the two tournaments that we'll be looking at this week on the Review with Stu segment. So over to you. And let's understand what we're going to be looking at this week.
Yeah. So as I say, we're on a Monday. Viewers might be listening to this on a Tuesday, so there's still information happening in the background. But very simply, a process of elimination that we can pick up and we can use, and we'll be discussing every single week. So I like to think of things in everyday life. If we are doing something for the very first time, whether it be driving a car, riding a bike, or tying our shoelace, doing something for the first time is a lot more difficult than if we've done it before. So the very first thing we're interested in looking at is, has there been any professional golf played at this venue? So it's a relatively new venue in South Africa. Jack Nicklaus design, so that's important. He has a style that he follows, and we can actually search for, behind the scenes, any players in the field who have a above average performance on Jack Nicklaus design courses. Now, on the DP World Tour, we're probably, if we're honest with ourselves, a step below the PGA Tour in terms of prestige and who we can attract. So the chances are not many within the field this week will have traveled outside of the European Tour and had the chance to play many Jack Nicklaus venues previously. So we then have a look of, have they played this one? Now, this SDC Championship here, it's played at a South African links course, which is called St. Francis Links. And it is actually the second time that the golf tournament has been played at this venue. So we have one full cycle where we can have a look at what type of golfer, who won last year, why did they win, what were the conditions like, who came second, who came in the top 10, is there a theme, were they all similar golfers, do they all appear in the top 50 for driving distance, are they all more accuracy or short game based players? And we try and draw a little bit of an assumption as to what type of golfer, what hypothetical golfer can we build that will be successful again. Now, as with mathematics, as with anything in life, the more data we have, the more valid and reliable it is. So we're going to go on to talk about, of course, its sister event over in Atlanta, formerly the Honda Classic. And the PGA National course there has been on the rota for nearly 50 years. So we have a lot more data to crunch. The assumptions that we make are a lot more rigorous. We can be more confident with them. And that goes back to Kev's question before. This week, there might be a more bias, whether it's conscious or unconscious, towards the points being attributed more in Florida because the data is more reliable. So we're looking at the course. What type of grass is it? What time of year is it? What season is it at the venue? Is it going to be firm? Is it going to be soft? Has there been much rain? So we're trying to get as much information as we can from social media, any caddies, any players that are there already. Have they got any images that we can look at and learn from, whether it be wind, whether it be condition of the course, the length of the rough? And then in the background, we're having a look at websites that tell us the type of golfer that have been there successful. So it's actually someone local to us all who won last year. This was Matthew Baldwin's breakthrough win, a links golfer, you know, from the Wirral, plays in Southport area. So that's really interesting.
He's grew up on Royal Birkdale, hasn't he?
Absolutely. And right behind him was Ewan Ferguson, Scottish. So again, he's going to have had a lot of junior, a lot of upbringing on Scottish links, and they were two of the top three. So straight away there, it tells us that we're possibly looking for links form. We might have a look at the Alfred Dunhill links. We might have a look at Open Championships and see if there's anybody in this field that has an above average ability than their norm. Do they perform better on these types of courses than they do for the rest of the year?
So what's the conclusion?
The conclusion...
Give sign up, money shot.
Sign up and find out. That's the conclusion.
Yeah, I'll see you on Wednesday for the conclusion. But yeah, so then comes the second side of that is there's no use, you know. Matthew Baldwin won last year. Without looking too intently, how's he playing now? Did he play last week? Has he had all winter off? So then comes in the second part of the equation, which is more current. So are people playing well now? Are people we went on a run recently. You may be familiar with the South African Xander Lombard. He played 6 events this year so far, and he hasn't been outside of the top 12 in all 6 of them. So that is someone who's playing really well, really consistently right now. So that's the other side of it. We have a look at their current form coming in. And if you get that perfect combination, which we then call a double trend, you will notice that we put a few points on that double trend because they clearly get on well with the venue. They're coming in with a lot of form as well. There's very, very little reason why those two things can't come together and they end up on a Sunday afternoon looking they might win or come close. One little nugget, you know, without giving away Wednesday, you know, I would be looking British. South Africa is a very good stomping ground for British people. Without going into a geography lesson, it sits on the same longitude. So there's very little time difference. So there's very little jet lag. There's players over the year. There's a Scottish golfer called Scott Jameson. His highest performances come in South Africa, both at the start and the end of the year. So I'd be having a look around the Scottish up-and-comers. There's a Scottish golfer called Connor Syme. He's played in the last 3 or 4 weeks. He's played relatively well. He was in the top 15 at this venue last year. So he's clearly got a first go out of his system. And someone like him, you know, he's around 40 to 1. You know, you'd be quite happy having him top 8 places, top 7 generally, and be confident with whatever you, for me, it would be something like 0.5 point each way, which, as we've mentioned before, could be 50p for somebody, could be £5 each way for somebody like that. And that brings in both of those thought processes going forward for that event.
So obviously, just for the listeners, anybody who's interested in understanding the 6 picks that will be selected, it will be 6 this week, will it?
It's usually, sometimes it's less. It's a maximum of 6.
Maximum of 6, okay. So
as with most things, if there's 2 or 3 in there that I can't see past, I'd rather have more points on 2 or 3 than less on 6.
Yeah, no, that's fine. So obviously anybody who's interested, do you want to just explain before we move on to the PGA Tour, obviously how would somebody be able to sign up, go online and give us your social media handle as well?
Everything is at SJP Golf Tips, and that's across Facebook and Instagram. The website, very similar, sjpgolftips.com. There are 3 packages depending on the commitment level that people have. As we've mentioned, this is not for a quick buzz. This is not football. It's not going to be over in 90 minutes. You're going to be making an outlay on a Wednesday morning, and you might not see that anything back for 4 days time in the afternoon. So there's 3 types of memberships, one for a month, one for what we call a quarter, which is 3 months, a quarter of the year. And then finally for 12 months, each one of those is discounted more. So there's an incentive there to make a bigger commitment. And then for you guys and your listeners, there is a code that's been created to get an even bigger discount to get people involved, which at the bottom of each of those sign up page, there'll be a question that says, have a coupon. Your listeners or viewers will be able to click that, and then all capital letters, all one word, if they input Bogey Boys, they will receive a further 33% off that initial and recurring payment for the lifetime of their membership. So really, if they take the discount on offer for the full 12 months and then reduce it further with Bogey Boys, it's literally maybe £4 or £5 a month that it works out at, which is really not much at all.
No, yeah, definitely recommend it.
Appreciate that.
Right then, so on to the PGA Tour then. Let's talk the start of the Florida Swing. Like you mentioned there, this is a tournament that's been around for a while, although it's got a name change this year.
Yeah, so new sponsor, you know, finance and sponsorship is ever changing in golf. But again, even something as simple as that, without wishing to be condescending or rude, most people would then think this is a completely new event. They wouldn't know that this is what used to be the Honda Classic for 30 years. They wouldn't know it's at the same golf course. Nothing has changed whatsoever other than the name of the sponsor. And sometimes, you know, it's hidden in plain sight, things like that. So over in Florida, we have much more confidence. We actually now have, when you get to a magic number of five events or five runnings of an event at a venue, you then have access to what we call strokes gained data. They don't release it on anything less than five rounds because it's not valid or reliable enough. There could be an anomaly. You could have somebody like the guy the other week on the web.com, which is now called the Corn Ferry, shot 57. Well, that's really going to skew his short-term statistics. So they wait for five rounds or above. The people who make these websites and data think that that's a true reflection. So for a place like PGA National, we have that in abundance, and that gives us unbelievable access to data that is, you just can't argue with it. It's valid, it's reliable, it's long-term in nature. Florida brings up additional variables, which I really like as well. It is a massive haven for PGA Tour golfers to live, and that is both American nationals and also European golfers. So the most amazing example of that, and again, another bit of a giveaway for you, I suppose, tune in or subscribe on Wednesday for everything. But this venue, out of all the venues in the world, is the most suitable for Shane Lowry. Somebody who you wouldn't think, he's Irish, he's won an Open, but he lives in Florida. He practices in Florida. He's used to the grass types. His short game is his speciality. It's at his best while in Florida because he's used to the grass. He's aware of the spin, what his ball will do out of a bunker around the green. He's used to the slopes and the nap of the greens. He's got a level of comfort. And he's built up the most amazing record here over the last 5 years, where he's contended. He's come fifth. He's come runner up. This was the most amazing. If people are into the golf, you guys included, if you can remember 2 years ago, this was the most remarkable end to a PGA Tour event I can remember, when Shane Lowry had all but won and then play stopped because of a storm, and yeah, he was forced to come back out during an absolute deluge. So a par five that Seb Straka had already reached with ease in two, because it was firm, it was fast, Shane Lowry couldn't get anywhere near it because the air was heavy. There'd just been an hour of consistent rain, and I found it so unfair. And I think we'd even backed Shane Lowry at the time, and he was playing a different golf course. And he came out and eventually lost and came second, purely because he couldn't get anywhere near. This par five became a really tough par five, and 1 hour earlier, Seb Straka had 20 foot for eagle, and he was in the clubhouse, and Shane Lowry couldn't match him. But he came fifth the following year, so he knew that he could play well there. He'd lost, he'd come second, and straight away he came fifth again. Never missed a cut, never been worse than top 50, got better. We look at that for a trend as well. He started 6 years ago, he came 50th, he came back, he came 49th, he came back 2 years later and came 20th. Then he came second, then he came fifth. So that level of comfort as he became a full-time resident of Florida and could see the shapes off the tee, knew that he could deal with it under pressure. He played there under the highest level of pressure. You know, that is a really strong argument for someone who's like, we then use the term horses for courses. The slight caveat behind that, he's not played much golf this year. He's only been seen three times in 2024. He missed the cut in one of those and came 60th in the other. So it's not the most confident of bets because there's not much to go off. But I'd like to have someone on our side who's got better every time. They've come fifth and second in the last two. They live in the state. You very rarely get times of the year when you get both of those. But those are the cases that you're making. In terms of the strokes gained, you know, we can have a look at that, and it tells us straight away, if we know where we're looking, Seb Straka again, that win when he did pip Shane Lowry to it, it wasn't a fluke that he was there. Over the course of 18 rounds, which is five events again, he is the fourth best in every single department, whether that be putting, strokes gained approach, strokes gained off the tee, around the green. He appears in the top 10 of every single golfer that's ever played at PGA National. So again, why is that? There's an element of comfort with every time he visited there, he's got better. He probably plays practice rounds there in the background for his own practice. And that is, again, someone who is really confident around that venue and is someone who you wouldn't be too bothered about having on your side. Slightly better case than Shane Lowry. He's actually played six times so far in 2024. He had a runner-up already and a top 10. So there's two bits of form there in the first 7 weeks of 2024 that show not only is he playing well at the golf course over a five-year period, but he's not playing too badly right this minute as well. So those are the two things you're looking at this week.
Yeah, just basing everything that you base your stats off, I think that the listeners will be much more inclined to back your picks based on, but instead of listening to what we were going on about last year.
very limited statistics, limited, if I'm honest.
Limited knowledge, but it's good that you stick to your process and your betting sticks to a process, and it's the same every week. Like, no fault of our own, we were just sort of doing what we're doing, but we were basing it off, oh, that's a long course, we want a long driver. Like, do you ever do things like that, or is it, do you always keep it to your level playing field?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be quite as simple as that because, you know, just, again, like you say, no fault of your own, just asking an open question to see what your answer is. But longer hitters, they hit it into places in the rough that not many people go. So the rough tends to be quite longer on most courses. It doesn't often happen in majors because of crowds. And we saw Bryson DeChambeau make a mockery of the US Open. But if you've got a long driver, they're often hitting it into parts of the golf course that not many people hit it. So the greenkeepers leave it. And it's not quite as simple as long course equals long hitter. The opposite side of that is a shorter hitter often doesn't reach the trouble. The trouble is a longer, further away off the tee. My own personal game at the very poor level I now play at, I love it when we're playing in venues and we're abroad because I can no longer get anywhere near the trouble. I can hit it as hard as I want. And these bunkers now are 300 yards away. Well, I'm 40 yards behind them if I'm lucky. So it does work both ways. And we no better example than that than last year's Open, Brian Harman, literally the shortest driver on the PGA Tour. And he couldn't reach the bunkers. He couldn't reach the hazards at Hoylake. So for him, he had a massive advantage. He didn't have to think about course management and hold himself back. He simply couldn't reach.
That's good to know. That I'll throw my notes away there.
No, it's good. And as I say, you know, the purpose of doing this segment, and we'll be running this every week now that the podcast is back up and running, is obviously you've got years of experience with this knowledge, looking at the numbers, looking at the data, crunching the data, looking at the golf courses. So even if people decide that they don't want to sign up to the website and to get those specific tips, at least the information and the nuggets they're getting from this will help make them enjoy the golf more because they'll be looking out for these things and looking out for these players. So, yeah, no, we appreciate you coming on. And is there anything else to add on that, or are you comfortable that we've done what we needed to today?
No, yeah, I think it's a great first week. Again, thank you for opening up this and giving me a chance to explain the method to the madness. And yeah, look forward to having our brief chats on Monday. I just reiterate to the viewers and the listeners that when this comes out, I think from you guys on a Tuesday, I'm still waiting on additional variables and we'll talk more as the weeks go on. But one of the massive ones that we haven't even mentioned yet, and we'll leave this as a bit of a cliffhanger for next week, is the tee time. And when pairings are made is absolutely massive. And we'll go into the reasons why and what we're looking for. Now, generally, local time, whether you're Florida, whether you're South Africa, wherever you're Abu Dhabi, wherever, generally those are released at 2 p.m. On a Tuesday on the week of event. So from there, a whole new level of research begins, and then you narrow down a short list, becomes smaller. Are they on the right side of a draw? Are they on the wrong side of a draw? What is the right side of the draw? What is the wrong? And yeah, so from 2 p.m. local time on a Tuesday, things get even more specific. So the names that I've mentioned today are first draft. And going back, I think I mentioned Connor Syme. He could end up being chucked at 3 p.m. local time in South Africa. The grass has grown longer. 100 people have trampled all over the ground before him. He's going to lose shots compared to his competitors. Yeah. The opposite could be the case for somebody else. We mentioned Shane Lowry or Seb Straka. Seb Straka could be handed a 8 o'clock in the morning tee time. He's going to be the 20th person to arrive on the greens. Less wind at that time of the day, so he's not fighting different crosswinds that people will later. And all these variables for us, at our standard of golf, we don't even give it a moment's thought. But for these guys, it's about one shot to one and a half shots per round of golf. And that adds up to as much as 6 shots a week. It could be missing the cut versus top 20. It could be top 20 versus top 5. It could be the difference between coming 6th and winning the event, all because of your tee time.
Yeah.
Wow.
We'll get into that next week, definitely. Look, appreciate you coming on and speaking to us again. What have we got next week? The Florida Swing is underway. We've got Arnold Palmer next week, isn't it, on the PGA Tour? And what have we? We're still in South Africa, I believe, for the TP.
Yeah, I think we got 3 weeks in a row in South Africa in different versions of things before they come a bit further north, yeah.
Okay, top man. Look, we'll speak to you next week. Anybody, again, those at SJP Golf Tips on all, across all the social media, www.sjpgolftips.com for the website. And then if you put the code in Bogey Boys, all in capitals, all one word, you'll gain 33% discount off your sign-on requirements. So, yeah, appreciate you taking the time and we'll catch you next week.
Spot on. Excellent. Thanks very much. Take care.
Cheers, Stu.
Right, so great to be back.
Some knowledge on the boy,
yeah. Well, obviously, I think people will really enjoy this segment because, you know, not listening to us waffle on about strokes gained and arguing over who's in pot one and pot four. We will obviously get back to the Fantasy Golf League eventually, but other pressing matters with the clothing and the dream to take over the globe, isn't there? So
yeah.
I think in the meantime, you know, we hope you enjoy these segments. He's obviously a very knowledgeable person and obviously a chance for us to win some dollar.
Hopefully.
With him. But yeah, we hope you've enjoyed the return of the Bogey Boys podcast. You'll be hearing more from us. So, ciao for now.
Ciao.
Ladies and gentlemen, oh boy, is he out of sync.